You wanted to not traffic in weather.
Totally an old man thing, but we do end up starting every episode with the weather now. So today is really nice outside. I mean, yesterday was absolutely beautiful. It's like, I don't know what happened, but we were still expecting the kind of gross early part of spring. And then all of a sudden it is like 75 degrees, sunny. Just, it's beautiful right now. It's great here.
Oh, yeah. The sun is slowly coming out. It was pouring rain so bad last night, I was a little bit worried. And I kept getting alerts from the Ring app that there's severe thunderstorms and to be careful. I don't know. They're like, hey, thunderstorm. Something you could do about it. But for the fact that the Ring app.
Good luck.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, the rain's coming. Go hide under the couch. I don't know what the point of that is. But it was pretty severe. It was pretty severe. But yesterday, I didn't film any of this. Me and Mike built a cover over my chicken coop. So I went to go out in the pouring rain to see if there were any drips. And my chicken coop, which I made 10 years ago now, that was a YouTube video that did well. The chicken coop, it has a playpen that's open to the air and then the interior, which is closed with a little window and a door. And the open to the air part, over the years, so that they could still play in the rain and the snow, the birds, I just threw plywood on top of it, even though it was fully caged in, but it was open. And the plywood got all soapy and gross, and there's tons of snow on it in the winter. Every time I went out, I was expecting it to be collapsed. So yesterday, me and Mike made a proper roof over it with the clear corrugated panels from Lowe's. And it's really nice in there now. And so the sun is going to be able to come through. It's a 10 feet by 10 feet pen. It's about 8 feet tall. But now the birds can safely hang out in the sun if I don't get out there in time to open it up for them, or when it's, so there won't be any snow and rain. That was always gross, going in to get the eggs. You'd have to walk through the sloppy, gushy chicken pen. But now with that proper cover, even with the plywood over it, it was really just to keep some of the rain out, but the floor got soaking wet. So now the floor won't get wet anymore. So I'm excited for the future of my chickens. I'm excited. You know how people pick on everything.
Get a title for the episode right off the bat. Just like,
What is it? What's the episode?
Excited for the future of my chickens. I mean, like,
yeah. No, because there was a couple times where I played the slow-mo video of them breaking out of the pen. I usually do it on Thanksgiving. And I always get the comment of like, your bird's feet are too dirty. They're going to get diseases. I'm like, okay, thanks. But now that won't happen because they're going to have a dry environment. So I did that.
Cool.
Did that yesterday. Well, good. That was loosely related to the rain.
Yeah, got it. Well, it's been nice here. David, what about you? How's the weather up there?
It's been much better. Opening the door. I had new shop doors installed a few weeks ago. At the beginning of winter, like, you could see gaps of light coming through the doors. And I'm like, I've been wanting to replace the doors for a long time, but I thought for a little bit that there might be a shop expansion. So I'm like, I'm not going to replace the doors if we're going to expand. And then that got axed. And so at the beginning of winter, I was trying to fill the gaps with some sealer, or with the sticky foam stuff that you put up there. And it just wasn't working. And I was just so frustrated. And so I just called the local door company and I'm like, I need new doors. And so they're like, okay, but we're 6 weeks out. I'm like, okay, well, I'll just suffer through the winter. And then the doors got installed a few weeks ago, and they're so nice. And they have the storm doors in there, and they still have the glass. And I'm going to take the glass out this week, maybe today, and put the screens in. And that
nice. I'm about to do that in the kitchen. That's really nice.
Yeah. We have, in the house, we had a couple storm doors replaced, and we have the, where the plexiglass part slides down to reveal the screen, because like the screen rolls up in the top, and they're really nice because it's just a really quick, easy change. But then you only get the top half of the screen. And for the shop, sometimes I just need to be able to air out all the dust. So I got two full screen doors. And one of these days, I'm going to go to Harbor Freight and get one of their industrial fans and just have it by the door so I could air that place out.
That's nice. Dave, can we talk about your breakdown in your last video? Was it too early?
Yeah, we sure can. yeah. Like, I think we talked about it before, but up until recently, we didn't, whenever I was frustrated, I would tell my brother Daniel to not record because I just can't, I can't think when the camera's on and I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want this to be recorded or documented. So I always told Daniel to just shut off the camera. I need time to think. But with the new guy, Jefferson, we were discussing, like, there needs to be more human moments in the video.
It was great. So, it was really funny. I was cracking up. And thank you for using the ice pick. Appreciate that.
And so he is instructed to do whatever he can to capture real human moments. So mostly we don't use handheld in the shop. We kind of like save handheld for tense moments, not tense moments, but moments of things where are not going great. And so he's been instructed to get the shot. And if I tell you to stop recording, do not listen to me. Your job is to record the human moments. And he lives for that. And so I had a glue up go bad. I was doing it completely wrong. And I didn't realize until late into the glue up. And we just spent all day, like 7 hours, cutting veneers out of solid maple.
Oh, yeah. And you put glue all over the wrong side.
I put glue on the wrong side. I scroll sawed all these little pieces. And I didn't want all that work to go to waste. So he captured the moment. And we decided to leave it in because it was real, and it was hilarious about an hour later because I needed to wash the glue off the pieces. There was 12 pieces, and I ran into the house and I tried to grab the biggest pot that I could so I could bring it out into the shop and fill it with water and wash all the pieces off. I don't have running water.
You go to put the piece in and it's like 6 inches too big. You're like, it's too small.
The pot is too big. I am not clearly thinking. I'm not thinking clearly. And I run back into the house. I can't find a tub. And Jefferson has no idea why I'm looking for a tub. So he's just confused, but he's recording the whole time. And I realize, oh, I can just take all the pieces into the house and wash them off into the sink. And when I'm in the house, my mic is still on, so he's still getting audio. But Kelly had just come home. And so if Kelly wasn't home, I probably would have been cursing up a storm inside the house, which would have made for great audio. But an hour afterwards, we were laughing about it because I was like, that was an overreaction. I know it was my natural reaction. I'm trying to get better at this, but it was definitely an overreaction. And he was like,
it was just funny to watch you suddenly realize how bad you screwed up because, you know, getting the glue on those thin pieces, it's just going to potato chip it no matter what.
And it did. And it made the glue up so much harder. And It's funny looking back on it. It was funny looking back an hour later because I'm come on, you're better than that. But
so I was watching that video and I texted you like along while I was watching it. But I got to past that sequence when you started, you know, moving forward with it. And it dawned on me that like if you had just kept on with what you had done and gone ahead and done the glue up with the glue on the wrong sides, it wouldn't have probably mattered, would it? Like, no, once you put the epoxy over the glue, you wouldn't have even known that they had glue.
Probably not. But when you're in the panic moment, you don't think about these. Like,
In your mind's eye, there was not supposed to be glue there, so it was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I go to therapy once a month. And one of the things that we're trying to work on is giving yourself just a little bit of space before you react. And so you can think. It's so hard to do though. I have just been, and I come from a family of like, you just react, you explode, you blow up, you yell. And it's so hard to put that little space in there but you only need 2 seconds to understand what is going on. And so I'm trying to train myself to give myself that gap.
Yeah. It is hard for sure. I think the way that I'm still getting better at it, I think. But I used to be very quick to react to a lot of things, especially with the kids. Like, especially when it would come to like disrespect or, you know, there would be a point where all of a sudden I would react and I could put up with stuff for a while. And then it was like something would snap. And I read somewhere that it has to do, like, it's related to your breathing. And when you breathe in, you breathe out on normal time, it's like 2 seconds in, 2 seconds out, or 3 seconds in, 3 seconds out, something like that. And so kind of like you're saying, 2 seconds, if you can force yourself to take in and out two breaths before you react, that was the way I started working on it, was like, if you can do that, that creates the space, the amount of time, and you can measure it by breaths rather than time, because time is moving faster when you're amped up and, you know, like, and so with the kids, I found that if I can take a breath in, breath out, then I'm a little bit clearer, or at least I've given my brain enough time to process why I'm frustrated in the first place, which is going to make my reaction different, you know, maybe still react, but maybe not quite as extreme. And then I think I even mentioned this last week. There's a, I know not everybody's not into the Bible, and that's fine, but there's a verse about being quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And that has become more and more of just, it's just good advice. Like, it's just a good thing to do. And I found also with the kids and with Jenny that the more I can shut up and listen, the less I have to talk and the less likely I am to react in the wrong way. And so, you know, that
I train myself to keep my mouth shut longer and longer and longer these days to the point where I don't say anything.
Yeah. I mean, there comes a point where you need to respond to things generally, but the longer you can put that off, the more information you're getting, the more patience you're displaying, the more you're giving space to the conversation to like write itself or somebody to do the right thing or whatever, you know, and that quick reaction usually takes away those opportunities for stuff to kind of level itself out anyway, but I'm working on it as well.
Yeah. I think the first step in all of it is just recognizing, okay, this needs to change. And then, but it is totally a muscle memory thing. And that's why it's so hard to change. So,
you know,
but I'm trying to make myself better.
So, good. I'm glad for that. There's another thing that this is a whole separate topic, maybe, but the idea of scarcity has been working its way into a lot of how I look at a lot of stuff lately and how we react to things based on perceived scarcity of something. So like for me, it's often time. I think, well, I have a limited amount of time today or right now or in the next 10 years, you know, before my kids leave or before I die, there's a scarcity, right, in time. Or we do it with money. You know, I have a limited amount of money. So my reactions are based on what if I don't get more of that thing that is already scarce? And so that's a pretty natural reaction to us trying to cling to something that we have that is falling out of our grip, you know, time, money, relationships, whatever. And we react based on scarcity, whether that scarcity is actually real or not. And I think that's the thing that I'm beginning to understand a little bit more about life, is that we think things are scarce or we're worried about them being scarce and we react so often based on that. But if let go of the fact that like I'm provided for, like my kids may move out of the house, but I'm not losing my kids. There's time tomorrow that's not time today. You know, stuff like that. If you start to think a little bit looser about like, you know, maybe things aren't as dire as I always think they are in the moment, then your reactions can adjust to that. And like I said, that's probably a whole topic by itself, but I have found that that connection has a lot to do with how I react to stuff. And sometimes
you reminded me of something.
Perception.
That I remind myself often when talk about scarcity, when you're worried about money or, you know, when the electric bill comes in or anything, it's just this, none of these things happen immediately. There's always a really long, there's always a correction period. Whereas, you know, if money's scarce, there's always plenty of time to make up for it. There's never, I mean, obviously there are circumstances where things, it's do or die, but overall, when you think of your overall situation, there's always so much more time to correct things than you think there is. You think tomorrow your car is going to get repossessed. You think tomorrow your mortgage is going to go into foreclosure. You think tomorrow, there's people close to me who almost went into foreclosure. It took like a year and a half. They got out of it, but it takes a lot longer than you think. And growing up, my dad panicked about stuff constantly, panicked about getting the car taken away, you know, money. Just my dad was always panicked about money. And he would say, they're going to take the house away. You know how many times I heard that term? And I'm thinking to myself, who's going to come take the house away? The bank. Mm-hmm. And you realize now the bank doesn't want your house. They just want your money. They want to make sure you give them money before they actually, they're taking the house as the last resort. And when I think back, we were never at that point where, I mean, as far as I know, my father never skipped mortgage payments. We own the house free and clear now for years, tens upon years, maybe 30 years we've owned the house free and clear. And then you look back at my mother's house, my mother and father's house was only $18,000. Their mortgage payment was like $200 a month, something like that. Mm. And that's the mortgage payment my dad was complaining about. But just in general, I always remind myself when things seem like they're dire, there's a really huge buffer zone for most of the things you worry about to correct.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, I think that I went into the whole project, and I'm not afraid to admit this. I don't know why my dog is being really needy right now. But I needed a quick win because I had a sponsored video before the end of the month, and I actually needed a set of coasters, and I went in with a plan. I'm like, this should be one day. The epoxy is going to cure overnight. And then the next day, all I got to do is cut it and put a coat of finish on the bottom. And I had a plan. I knew each step, you know,
it goes awry. So you stop panicking.
It's the projects where I don't know what the next step is. Those, I never know how long those are going to take. But this one, like, I knew each step. I knew what I needed to do, and it was going to be an easy win. And then it wasn't. And it made, I mean, honestly, it made the video better, but, people like seeing me fail, but,
I don't know that they like seeing you fail.
I don't think they like seeing you fail. I think they like seeing you being real.
Yeah.
Because you could see I went for the comments quick, and I noticed any comment about it was like, it's nice to see that you're human just like me. It's nice to see that we all have the same problems.
Yeah. So we're just trying to record more of the human moments, even if it is embarrassing, and maybe it'll make me better because I'll learn to control myself a little bit better.
Hmm. That's a good point too.
That's because, one way to do it.
Like
it,
When I said I went into the house, Kelly was home, so I wasn't trying to embarrass myself in front of Kelly. So, but if I was a home alone, I would have been cursing up a storm. When there's nobody around me, like the stuff that comes out of my mouth is terrible.
It was so funny to see you get bleeped. I was cracking up watching you bleep. You bleeped like four solid bleeps in that very first clip.
My face is so red in that moment. I am just so frustrated.
But imagine that video. Yeah, I think you're right that it did make the video better. Because imagine that video if it had gone correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you made coasters and you got to the end of it. I bet, just knowing you, you would have gotten to the end, put the video out and been like, well, I could have done better on that because, you know, it went to plan and like whatever, you know, you would have like found a way to say, yeah, I could have made the video better. I could have made this better or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I thought it was really good.
But thank you.
I understand the frustration for sure.
The coasters was basically a little prototype for a big wall art. So it's the depth map. Bathymetric, I think is the correct term, but it shows the different layers of the lake. And I wanted to make this big wall piece. And for the wall piece, I am not going to pour different colors of epoxy. I think I'm just going to
paint. Experiment, you realize you don't need it.
I don't need it. Yeah, I'm going to paint the different layers. And then if I do pour epoxy, it'll be clear. But it might be a custom sheet of glass that goes over top. So, it was a good lesson learned. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Who would you like inset the glass just in the water?
Yeah, just on the top layer, I'm thinking, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You guys, everybody seems to have forgotten the original river tables were really only glass. You remember those original river tables 25 years ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whoever came up with the original concept was you would route both sides and there would be layers of glass to fit in each one of the shallow layers. Probably if it's a quarter inch glass, each layer would be a quarter inch and you'd have a stack of glass in the thick part. Could be 7-8 sheets of glass filling up, or even I've seen it with one good thick piece where they route a little groove.
Yeah,
that
I didn't realize there were more than one sheet.
Matches the natural shape.
Hmm.
And the piece of glass goes on the top, and then people started mimicking that with resin. So the original glass ones still look very stately. They look really,
yeah,
very expensive because there's nothing to substitute real glass, especially when it's thick edged and if polished.
There's definitely a different look to it. The only thing that I worry about with the glass, if it's 4 foot long and it's hanging on the wall, is the glass too reflective? Like, are you going to be able to see the different layers? That's my only worry about making the wall piece.
I think looking at my glasses, every meeting I'm in, I'm like this, you can see in my eyes. But then if I tilt my head down a little bit, so if you put it like a 4 or 5 degree tilt down, probably won't pick up a lot of that out the window.
So you're talking about the reflection, David, are you talking about the reflection of the room into the piece or the stuff behind it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, is the reflection of the lights or the windows coming in going to be take away from what the actual piece is?
Gotcha. Which you might still have that even if you did epoxy, you know, because if it's glossy.
True.
Yeah. So the angle is probably the thing to do either way. You were talking about, you know, the one day kind of quick win type thing. I've just decided that is an impossible thing. that the whole idea of I need a quick video, I'm going to do this quick thing is a lie that we tell ourselves to feel like we can get something done faster than it's supposed to be done. Mm-hmm. Because every time I've tried to do that, it has backfired. Or it comes out in a way that I'm not proud of and it was not worth the time that I'd put into it anyway. You know what I mean? And so I have this week, I have, I'm traveling next week. And so I had finished up something, the planner thing I was talking about at the end of last week. And then I had this week and I'm like, cool, I'm going to do this other project. I have a deadline. That deadline got postponed. So I had basically a free week, Tuesday on. And so yesterday, I'm like, oh, well, what can I do between now and then? I'm just going to come up with a quick idea, you know. And so I spent most of yesterday trying to come up with an idea for a shoe rack. I was like, this is something that everybody could use. I'll come up with some clever way to do a shoe rack thing, to way to hold shoes into my closet. I can take this mess of all these shoes that I've somehow ended up with and like put them in a cool way to organize and whatever. So I spent all this time, got the notebook out. I'm like drawing and sketching and measuring and come up with ideas. And I get an idea. Nope, that's not right. So I go back and I do spend all afternoon. And I ended up designing drawers. I spent the entire day designing drawers. That's all I came up with. And so
drawers
I was like,
for shoes?
They're just drawers.
Oh.
To put shoes in.
Yeah.
But it was a huge waste of time because I thought I was aiming for something clever, right? And aiming for something that was like a clever way to do it.
It could still be there. It just hasn't raised its head yet.
No, I think I found it actually after this. But it was just annoying that I was like, okay, so I'm going to do these slide out trays and the trays don't need fronts because of this. But then I want a front on the whole thing so it's not, you don't see a bunch of shoes. And the more I kept like, okay, I need this and I have to have this, but I can't have this. The more I did that, I ended up with building two drawers. And it just felt like what a waste of creative effort, you know, to get to basically the same thing. The thing then mutated after being frustrated for a little while and sitting at a soccer game last night. The thing mutated into, well, what if I make a clever way to house shoes in drawers so that you can get a bunch of them in there and you can easily get them out one pair at a time. And then, like, I think I figured that out. So theoretically, you could add it to any drawer that was deep enough. But I don't know. It was just a frustrating thing, you know, like trying to design and then you end up like going to this kind of lowest common denominator. A box is a box is a box kind of thing, you know.
So. I feel that quite a bit. I have this body of work and I think some of the things are pretty creative. And so I'm like, okay, I need a thing. I'm just going to come up with an idea for that thing. And then you, based on your past work, you're like, this should be easy. I should know how to come up with something creative. And then you come up with nothing. And I just hate that feeling so much. And I don't know if it's because I go in thinking I'm going to be creative. I'm going to find that little thing that's going to get me excited about it. Or if it's just my taste has grown too much. And so all those little things that used to get me excited before, I need to outdo so it's exciting for me. I don't know. It's a game. The whole thing is a mental game.
I think for me, that's the second thing you said there, paired with maybe an untrue, unrealistic expectation I have of the audience's opinion. Like, I could make a nice looking set of drawers for shoes and come up with some design on the front of it. And I thought, like, okay, well, this is where I'm at. This is what I ended up with. Maybe I just make it fancy, you know? But then the part of my brain goes, well, yeah, but the audience has seen this from me and from many other people so many times. They're not going to be interested. It has to have a hook. It has to have a thing that is unique and creative and past the norm, you know? And even when I was trying to come up with what is this quick project that I'm going to do, in the shop, I walked over where I have... One day I made this quick little just cutout hanger for like drills and drivers so you can hang them upside down just to get them out of the way. And then below that, there's a router and a nail gun and a couple other tools that are just kind of like piled up. And so yesterday when I was trying to come up with this quick project, I looked at that area and I'm like, oh yeah, what if I actually went back and did like a shop project again and I made a little thing to hold all these tools? And I immediately killed the idea. The audience doesn't want to see that. They've seen that from every person who's ever put out a woodworking video. There's nothing I could do in that thing that would make it valuable enough to stand above what I've done in the past or what anybody else has done in the past. Now, I don't know if any of that is true. Maybe all of it's true. Maybe none of it's true. But it was enough for me to take an idea, something that would make my daily life a little bit more organized, and I just killed it, you know? Mm-hmm. And... like, I don't know what to do with that. There's part of me that says, yeah, we should fight that and just make the thing. And then part of me says, no, that's a stepping up of the bar within yourself about like, you need to do something that is more than the basic. You need to do something that is interesting for people. And I don't know. I'm not really sure what to do.
I often think of a basic, when I often think of a basic idea, like you just said, you like shop furniture, eh? But if I'm confronted with that dilemma, I often think, how can I make the video itself different? How can I make the process different? How can I approach it differently with different materials? Or how can I transform something I don't need anymore into something I do need now? How can I take an old shelving unit and then transform it into shop furniture? Whatever it might be, I'm using your example. But those are some of the parameters I put on when I start editing myself, I think. As a matter of fact, we talked about my project before we got on the air, the lamp. And so I'm making this lamp to kind of lead into, if we want to talk about the topic.
Yeah.
I'm trying to come up with a project that I don't really have anything planned big for this weekend. I don't really have any sponsor videos. So it's like, I want to make something simple. What do we need for the house? So me and Rachel were brainstorming and she's like, oh, you know, maybe one of the rooms we've made over one of the rooms just to get it back to normal because it was a little disheveled. So we repainted it, painted the floor, and I made side tables off camera a couple weeks ago. Oh, why don't we make lamps? I was like, actually, it's a good idea. So I started thinking about lamps. I was inspired by these two tubes. You'll see it in the video. We did some spring cleaning and these 6-inch pipes laying around and there's two cutoffs and they're both the same size. And I kept looking at them unconsciously over the last several weeks thinking, oh, those look like a set of lampshades because they're these perfect tubes. And So when the idea of lamps came up, I immediately thought of those tubes, and I started approaching them like, how can I use these tubes as a mold to put something on them? What could it be? And then I said, oh, maybe we could do end grain. So I started slicing some experiments with end grain. You can't see light through very thin walnut, I found out. So that didn't work. So I started slicing through some other thin veneers. I'd done veneered lampshades in the past. And I started experimenting with 11-ply Baltic birch, sliced thin, and then laid out in a weave pattern, similar to what Michael Alm's been doing. But I did like a basket weave where it's alternated. And I texted you guys. I'm like, who has done this before? And neither one of you could remember. In fact, I even asked ChatGPT. I sent a picture to ChatGPT. I was like, has anybody done this in a YouTube video recently in the last 10 years? And it pulled up some examples. It said, but exclusively exactly like this, no one's done it exactly like this in a lampshade. I was like, all right. And it wasn't until late last night that I remembered, I think I'm the one that did it. That's why I'm feeling so familiar about it. And I went to one of my old portfolios, and 30-something years ago, me and my sister had a little gift shop in the Lower East Side, and I made a series of these wooden lampshades as a sliced veneer, but I didn't realize I did that. And then I remembered at the last minute. I'm like, but I'm approaching the project totally different than I did 30-something years ago, which is why it wasn't that familiar to me. I am approaching it just subconsciously the way Paul Jackman would if he was going to make a lathe setup with intricate pieces of wood, where you would make a ring and then a ring and then a ring, and then you'd have these 20 rings sitting on your bench, and then you start stacking those. And that's how I have approached it, simply because of what I've been exposed to in the last 30 years. That was immediately how I thought about this project. When I found the picture that I sent you guys this morning, and this will all be in the video, that the picture of the one that I made previously, I can't even remember how I made it. I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think what I did is I rolled up a piece of acetate, because I knew I had that piece of acetate was going to be my mold. If I rolled it onto itself a couple of times, like thick acetate, I'd have a tube. I could make any diameter I want. Tape the end so it doesn't unravel, glue these wooden pieces all the way around it, and then when it was dried, I'd be able to acetate, roll it tightly, and pull it out of the lampshade. This is what's coming back to me while I'm thinking about it. I think that's how I did it. But the whole time, I literally had to glue one piece at a time. So I glued the whole entire thing together one piece at a time and made up this 15-inch tall lamp. It was like 15 inches tall by like 8 inches in diameter. It's like a stovepipe with a light in it with little feet sticking out of the bottom. And I'm doing something similar now. But it's interesting how all this time's gone by. And I thought this lamp project was going to be kind of boring. But as I started realizing how I was going to make it differently, I think there's going to be a lot of interest from my 30,000 followers that watch all my videos now. My audience has been reduced to 30,000 views. So I'm really excited to surprise those 30,000 people. The process of making this lamp it's come up as I'm working on it. I was pulling these rings off of the mold one at a time, and they're all floppy doppy. And I'm like, they're never going to be the same size. I'm like, oh, hey, you got a laser cutter. Go cut a disc at a corrugated cardboard. So I have tons of that. I cut a bunch of 6.65-inch discs, and as I pull these pieces off of the mold one at a time, these donuts of wooden veneers, I gently pop the cardboard into them to keep them perfectly round. And so today, once everything's nice and dry, I'm going to sand eat the surface, so now when they marry side by side, they're going to marry perfectly. I'm just going to go gently on this disc sander and sand them flat so the faces all match. I don't know if any of that makes sense, but so it's interesting to approach a project 30 years later, completely different. And so I was feeling the same thing, to get back to the original concept. I was feeling the same thing of like, it's just a lamp, but let me get into it and see where it goes. And I honestly thought I was going to glue a ring and then glue the next ring and the next ring and then figure out how to pop it out of the tube later. But I was like, let me make one ring, and then I'll pull them apart, I'll glue them together separately, then I'll glue like two rings together. Like Dave, you were talking about in your video, you should have glued these two together, and then those two together, and then married them later. So I was thinking in that terms of that. And so the process is evolving as I'm working on it, as it always does with me. And it's becoming more interesting to me than it was when I first almost edited it out. I'm like, eh, but they're just lamps. And they're like, I really never really made a lamp. I don't even remember making lamps in YouTube anywhere. I know I've done it on shows a few times. I obviously must have made a lamp in YouTube. It's, of all these years, I just can't remember if and when and how. But I haven't done this. And when I made the original one, YouTube and TV was nowhere in my horizon. That's how long ago I made this. So it's nice to revisit old projects sometimes. And I'm showing you guys these thick portfolios of mine. And I'm reminding myself, these were high up on a shelf last night. I had to get on a stepladder to get them. Thought to myself, if I'm lacking ideas, I should go through these books and find something that I made in the late 90s and do it again.
If you can be inspired by yourself, that's the best inspiration ever, right?
Yeah. It was so funny. I got into the shop. I got home from the shop last night. I got into the house last night and I was like, I think I am the one that made those lamps. I'm thinking, I'm like, did Michael Allen make a lampshade out of like sliced plywood? I mean, he's done such beautiful work with that concept. I'm like, he must have made a lampshade. And then so like the little tiny voice way in the back is like, you made it. Go look in the portfolio.
I do find that when I go into a project, I would say like 60% of the time I'm in a project, I don't know what the exact final outcome is. There's a little bit of anxiety for me when I go into a project without a plan, because I don't know how long it's going to take and everything is based on time. But what I do find is when I go in with a plan, without a plan, I get to a certain point. And then when that idea hits, I am super excited about the project again. So that excitement for, and the motivation for that project comes and goes in waves, because when you come up with that perfect idea in the middle, now it's like, ah, oh, I'm so energized. This is what it was supposed to be. So there's downsides to having a plan, but there's also upsides to, you know, just winging it.
Hmm. So one of the interesting things that you were talking about there, Jimmy, the winging it thing is like down the road, you know, in, I don't know, it's in the process. The thing that's interesting about the lamp thing is that you weren't intentionally repeating something that you already did.
No, I totally did it unconsciously.
Yeah. Which is a very different thing than, which kind of what we started talking about before we hit record, is like, I did a thing at one point and now looking back on that, I could see that I could do it better, or I could do it differently, or I could, you know, do the next iteration of that thing.
I've gotten so old. That's the problem. I'm going to be 59 on Friday. I've gotten so old, like my memory is starting to slip out of my ears. Every once in a while, there's like wetness near my ears. I think it's my brain.
That's disgusting.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you can just go and remake a bunch of projects because you don't remember doing it the first time.
Every day is a new day. But go ahead, Bob.
But that's interesting, you know, that they both have a place, right, with your body of work, with the amount of time that you've been building things. Intentionally redoing some of those things, totally valid. Unintentionally doing those things again and realizing it later is totally valid, because it's still a new idea to you, even if it, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. With all the learning I've learned since I made that lamp till now, I've had like 10 educations. And the opportunity that's afforded all of us with CNCs and how the, you know, we've lived through the CNC revolution. I mean, all of us, it really has been a huge evolution at home shops and home CNCs. And, you know, the conversation is going to go on for a long time, whether CNC is real woodwork or not. I think it is, but we can have that fight somewhere else some other time. But in general, it's interesting to see how I would approach a project. And not only did I not remember the project, I kind of vaguely made up what I just told you guys about the acetate and stuff, because I know I did that somewhere in my life. I don't know if I did it on that project or not. I can't hardly remember exactly how I did it. The one thing I do know is that the one in the picture is very textured. So each individual piece was glued and left, the one in the past versus the one I'm making now. I'm planning on sanding it totally smooth. Once I put it all together, I might even make a jig to put it on the lathe simply just to sand it, not to try and lathe it, work it at all. So that's my intention, is because each little facet is flat. And then when it comes together, Bob, you point out, you're going to have like a little sharp turn. So whatever that degree is, but I plan on sanding it all and smoothing the whole thing out and then building up a surface with epoxy, with total boat epoxy, and then sanding it and building it up so that they look like these tubes, these like clear, smooth tubes. That's my intention. We'll see how I get if I get there.
So I just wanted to throw this out there. You said you couldn't remember if you had ever done a lamp before.
Mm-hmm.
I found 8 lamp videos by you on YouTube. Oh, no. I knew there was at least one because I remember very early on.
I can't even remember one.
This one was 13 years ago. So this was it was a piece of plywood where you cut slats, you cut little lines through it, and then you wrapped it into a circle. And I remember
that was really close in time to these other lamps, like close in, you know, timeline of my life. It was only a few years later, or maybe, you know, 10 years later. Now it's like 30 years later, but it was 10 years later when I made those about. So those were still in my mind to like slot the wood. I think I remember that now.
Yeah. I remember watching that one. And it gave me ideas, but I couldn't like rip it off at the time because it didn't, you know, like it would have looked like I had just ripped off your idea.
You could rip
but
it off.
But anyway, looking through here, you have 13 different, not 13, you have 8 different videos about making different types of lamps, and they are all, most of them are wildly different. There's a couple cube ones that were for different people, companies and stuff, but anyway, I just want to point that out.
I can't even remember any of them.
I want to talk about how you felt going through your old books, because I have this like perceived image of my past work of it not being very good. And then I go and look at it. I'm like, oh, that was actually better than what I thought. So when you're flipping through your old portfolios, what feelings are you getting? Are you impressed with yourself?
I would say it's almost like another life, because when I look at all that work, the last 10 to 15 years has been exploring and experimenting and getting paid for it by corporations, which is obviously the dream, and versus working for clients, which is very lucrative, but it's a total pain in the ass. So I look through, when I flip through my portfolio, I remember, I'm like, oh, I remember that client. Oh, I remember that person. Oh.
You're remembering the wrong thing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm showing you, I work for Leonardo DiCaprio through an interior designer. He was there all the time. We spent a lot of time together. He was very cordial. And, you know, I never took a picture with him. I never asked him for his autograph. And I think in time he became really comfortable with me, and we would laugh and have, you know, jovial conversations. He was very at ease eventually with me and the decorator and stuff. He was an easygoing guy anyway. He's not tense in any way, but we had a lot of laughs because I never pulled the camera out or pulled out a Sharpie or anything. But looking through the book, I have fond memories of the Leo project, and he was never a hassle. Anything we did, he was just like, if he didn't like it, he's like, just do it again. Like he wasn't, you know, complaining at all. And I'm looking at projects that I forgot I made that I threw away, that big chest. I'm like, oh, why did I throw that away? And I'm trying to remember the reasons why I threw it away. There was something about that project I didn't like. And so when it came time to moving out of that apartment, I'm like, I'll just throw it away. I put it on the street. Somebody took it. So I'm glad it lives on. And then this picture of this frame, see that hand carved frame I made that to make a mold of it. I still have that original frame, but I left it alone with my Yorkie Lucky one day. I didn't have any idea that he was going to plan on chewing off the points on the frame. So the where he could reach it, where it was like leaning on the wall. He chewed off the corners of the frame, which was like always upset me. I was like, one day I'm going to build it back. But now it's a fond memory because my little doggy that I love chewed it off. So, you know, it's like I see like the history of my life when I flip through them. It's nice. Yeah. It's like I lived like 4 different lives up to this point. You know, I'm going to be 59. So, and all were good. Nothing was bad. I can't complain about anything.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky.
It's so amazing that you still have this like crazy passion and you still get crazy excited about new projects, even, you know, 40 years later. It's just in us to make stuff.
My Uncle Billy died. He was a great guy. He was in his late 80s and he's been sick, and he went out the way he wanted to. He didn't want to go to hospice or anything. He's like, I'm just going to stay home until it, and then he passed away. And so this weekend I went to the funeral and I saw some of my cousins who I don't see often. And my one cousin, Jimmy System, he goes, man, he goes, I see you on Facebook every day. He goes, you never stop. He said it with a lot of curses. He goes, you never stop making stuff. Now you could imagine a Long Island mechanic saying that. In his tone, he goes, you never effing stop effing making SHI. It was just funny the way he said it, because it's his dad, and you know, we were kind of teary, and he just goes, man, I watch you. He goes, you never stop. And I just said, I go, I have nothing else to do. That's all I do. I have nothing else to do. I have nowhere to go. I'm not drinking. I'm not partying. I go, I just make stuff. And he just goes, well, I've been enjoying it. So it was a nice moment. We had a laugh.
Awesome.
Boom. But I still enjoy figuring things out.
Yeah. Okay, so to take this idea a little bit further, are there any projects for both of you that, I know we could do everything better. Everything we've done in our past, we could do better today than we did then. But is there anything that you've done that like is eating at you, you need to do it again to make it better or different or something?
Yeah, I made the Woody last year, and if I did it again, I would do it differently, the Woody car. So there's no immediate need, but there's a slight itch to do that type of project again, to do it again. And if I did it again, how I would do it better and different. You know, that goes back to what I always say. If you want to get better at anything, you got to do it several times, if not 100 times or more. I'm not going to build 100 Woodies. I might build 2, maybe 3 in my lifetime. I built 2 boats. I got better at it. The second time I did it, it was a lot quicker. At least it felt quicker because I had been there before. And it seems more familiar, but at least that's the one thing that comes to mind. And I've been iterating on go-karts every year. And every year I make it, I'm like, ugh, why did I do that? Next year I'm going to make it better. And then I did, I'm like, ugh, why did I do that? Next year I'm going to make it better. It just keeps happening. I'm about to make another go-kart. This time a little bit different than the past, with an electric motor with help from Sparks Motorcycle.
The only project that's kind of eating at me right now is just my desk right here in the office. The desk that I'm using now, I made. It's perfectly fine. It's functional. But I have this desire. Like, my shop is very styled. There's a feeling when you walk into it. And I like that feeling. That's what I like about my shop. I know what I'm supposed to do when I go in there. I don't get the exact same feeling when I walk into my office. So I want to remake my desk and the tables that are going to go on both sides of it, so it feels like one cohesive unit. I want it to have, this is not going to be a good description, but I want it to have like a cockpit feel. Like, okay, I belong right here. This is where I do my creative stuff. And not only can I do better, but I can increase the feeling that I get when I sit down at it. And that's the only project that's really eating at me right now. But that's going to be after the art show. That's going to be later in the summer.
Cool. I feel that too.
What about you?
In my office. But I don't know that I have anything that I'm like, I really want to go back and redo. And I don't think that's not because I think they're all great. I don't mean it that way. I just mean that I don't care enough about anything that I've done to redo it. You know what I mean? Like, I just would rather move on with
other
stuff.
That's part of your past, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, I am the type of person that would happily tear out anything that I've ever built to build something else in its place. Like, you know... I don't care.
I have no emotional attachment to my past projects. I'm only emotionally attached to the one that I'm working on or the one that I just finished. But once I start that next thing, I don't care. Yeah. It can go in the fire pit.
Yeah. And I think I kind of feel the same way. I think about most things. And so I think because of that, I don't really care so much to redo them because they serve the purpose. They accomplish whatever. We've talked about this. I'm definitely more of a function than form person. So if they're functional and they do the thing that they're supposed to do, like, cool, move on, you know? So, but there are a couple of places where So several years back, I built some built-ins in our living room. There was a big opening in between where there used to be built-ins. I took those out and I built new ones to put our TV in and all this type of stuff. I would like to eventually probably rebuild those to modernize them with just how our life is now. We just have different stuff. We have a bigger TV. We have, you know, but it's not because I think I did a bad job last time. It's just, it would be cool to just get that out of the way and mm-hmm. do today's version of it. At the same time, I don't think I could justify that as a project, which I wrote down the word justification while you guys were talking, because I realized while I was listening to both of you talk that I have a problem with justification around my projects. And that's something we should probably talk about at some point. Not today.
You mean the purpose for being?
Yeah. And like a validation and like why it's worth doing and why it's worth making a video.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is the correct way to look at projects, but yeah. that's the way I look at projects, you know.
Yeah. Well, I
would go back to saying the justification is the learning and the unforeseen path. You assume you have a path. You assume you know what you're going to do. But then as you get into it, you glue the wrong side, you panic, you run around, you get a piece of gold, you know, stuff like that. You just don't know, but you set a path forward in your mind. It's going to be X, Y, Z, and that'll get me to where I need to be. And then as you get into it, so the justification is the unforeseen path, is the yellow brick road. Who knows what's going to happen? You might meet the scarecrow, the tin man, the lion.
Or it all might go right.
It'll be a boring ride.
Yeah.
That is true. That is so true.
Any other thoughts on any of this? I mean, we've been through a lot of different things today, but
yeah, it's good stuff. Okay. Good stuff. I'm going to show. I'll show my portfolio off. I did it once before, but I'll show it off on Instagram and whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, you have such a great body of work that's a potential video right there of just like understanding who you were at this particular time, the things that you made and who you are now. I think there's so much value in looking back.
I gotta get Casey Neistat to make that video for me.
Well, and also, I mean, it might be interesting to find connections between, you would have to spend some time like going through your digital portfolio to your analog, but like the lamp is a really good example of, I'm making this thing now, but I realized that it came from this thing that I did in the past. And so what other connections are like that? What other things did I end up making a video that were derivative of or couldn't exist without this first thing that I did way back when, you know? I mean, that would be a good way to shout out some of the videos that have gotten just like buried in your catalog of stuff, but also showing that they came from somewhere, you know?
I did a quick scan while we were talking and I did notice a few lamps that I forgot I made. One which is sitting on my desk. I forgot it was a video. It's all tangled up, but it's the little metal guys climbing up the wall.
Oh, yeah. That's in the list I saw.
Yeah. There's one here and there's one in the bathroom.
Cool. All right. Yep. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome.
What a long trip it's been.
And we're really grateful for the support from everybody at Patreon at every level. It all matters, and we're really grateful for all of it. Huge thanks to our top supporters that go above and beyond. That's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Jim Sammons, Master of None, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Lone Design, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Tinius Space Industries, and Works by Solo.
Thank you, guys.
But also people like, let's see, Papa Chad. Papa Chad's on there. And you saw Papa Chad a couple weeks ago. But big thanks to everybody.
I wanted to say thank you. A lot of guys, Rob is really stepping up and becoming sort of the marketing manager for the website. And he's been really pushing me to push the ice pick. And I just want to say thanks. So some of those guys that were in the top 10 have been, recognized a couple names, have been pushing my ice pick and sending me little videos and reposting videos. So we're going to do a little ice pick push where you're going to customize your own ice pick. So that's something we're going to do going into the summer. But, we're also going to make a poster of ice pick uses, and this is all Rob's initiative. And, so more and more people are sending me little clips of them using the ice pick. And Dave, you used it yesterday in your fit of rage. I was just glad it didn't end up going in Jefferson's face.
I can't tell you how useful that thing is. It is.
Thank you.
So, hopefully I can use our relationship to get two more ice picks from you.
Of course.
If not, I'll purchase them. But it's so great when you're gluing up small pieces and you need to hold something down. It's great for that.
It's like a long fingernail.
It's a long fingernail. I'm pulling out little hairs or dust from epoxy and it all dries on there, and I just go to the disc sander and I sharpen a new tip on there all the time. So it's getting shorter and shorter over the
I'll
years.
Send you some replacement.
But
plate.
It's been so, it's so useful for so many things. It's right there in my drawer, right next to the hammer and screws, because I use it all the time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So like I said, a couple of the guys in that top 10 list have been shouting me out. So thank you all, and everybody who does. So thank you.
Cool. Right on. Everybody in the on Patreon gets the after show, no matter what level they support. So if you want to get the after show, which is a separate podcast, you can go to patreon.com/makingit and sign up again at any level, and you'll get the after show podcast or video or both or whatever tickles your fancy. You guys have anything to recommend this week? I've got a couple.
Oh, yeah. I had a good one. Dave, you go first.
Okay. Well, I came up with two because I didn't expect Bob to have a pick, and now Bob has two. So
thank you. Appreciate it.
The first one is a YouTube channel I just came across the other day. The algorithm treated me with this. It's called 10K per tree. And it just shows a guy. He goes into the woods and he takes trees that have already fallen over and he cuts cookies from them and he dries them and sells them. And he's only got like 3 or 4 videos, and it's really well made. And it really shows off how much work goes into making these cookies. It's not like just taking a tree and cutting them up and you make money. There's actual work that goes into each one. It's just a very good video. The channel's called Stormfeld. And then the other one is from the Wall Street Journal. They did a little, history and how it's made of the Eames chair, the Eames lounge chair. And there's been plenty of these videos over the years, but this one's really good. And it's cool to see the history and how this chair has basically not changed in 60 years or however long it's been around.
Mm-hmm. My video is from New Mind, which is a cool channel that has really deep dives deep dives on technical stuff. Called New Mind. I think I've talked about it once before. And it's the insane forbidden knowledge of the world's most important thing. And I think it's April Fool's Day. So
it's quite
this
a title.
Is like a little misleading title. It's about the paperclip. And if you recently heard our president.
This does not look like a paperclip at all.
Yeah. Okay. Our president recently talked about, he compared his ability to invent things to the person who invented the paperclip. And he spewed, of course, a bunch of lies about where the original paperclip came from and who thought of it. And it was completely fabricated, whatever he said. And this tells the truth. I think that was probably what inspired him to do this video. It's the actual truth about where the paperclip came from.
Interesting. I'm going to have to figure out how to write that whole title down. Oh, that's crazy. The insane forbidden knowledge of the world's most important thing.
Yeah, a paperclip.
Got it.
That's intense.
The paperclip is not in the thumbnail or in the title, but that's what it's about.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's okay. A great channel, by the way. Like I said, he does a deep dive on brakes. He does a deep dive on bearings. He does all kinds of fun stuff. Very knowledgeable.
So I got two. One is, my actual pick is... Peter McKinnon, I still like blanked on his name. Peter McKinnon's not newest video, because he actually put one out this morning, but one from a couple days ago called I Miss the Old Pete. And it's just him sitting at the desk talking to the camera. And I don't know. It just hit something in me because I feel all the stuff he was saying about, like, it's just about being creative and about how change happens. And sometimes you have people say, I miss what you were when I was this, you know, and he kind of points out that that's like totally valid. And it is totally valid, even though it doesn't feel great sometimes when you hear that. Anyway, I just like felt a lot of the stuff that he was saying, and I got to the end of it and I left him a comment, which he, I'm sure he doesn't read the comments, but I also missed the old Pete, but I also really like the new Pete. And I think that's an important distinction, because I think there are people that miss the old Bob, but I know that there are people that like the new current Bob, today's Bob, and tomorrow's Bob will be different than today's Bob. And so I just, you know, I wanted him to know. I don't know, if, like I said, if he'll ever see that, but I do miss how his videos were way back, but I also appreciate the fact that he's still doing things and he's doing it differently and he's going to continue to do it differently. And anyway, it's worth watching. And the other one is Andy Klein has a new tool.
Oh, yes. We should mention Andy Klein's new invention.
Yeah. For sure. So he put a video out, and it's a good video too. But it's also just showing off this invention that he made that he's calling the Domino Killer. And basically it's like, it drills three holes at the same time.
It seems like something that's been around for 100 years, but he just simplified.
It really does.
It's like four inventions put together. It's like four practical things, but he streamlined it, simplified it. And I think his breakthrough was the idea of using the three gears. I'm not speaking for him, but when I look at it, I'm like, oh, the simplification of just using the three gears run by the center one. Well, the one is the drive shaft and then the two outside gears. And you just get a drill bit that goes in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
That's it. Either you get two that go in the opposite direction or one that goes in the opposite, depending upon if you're going to do a proper drill.
I didn't even know that was a thing until I saw the video.
Yeah. So that's, I think that was his little breakthrough, is to have the reverse drilling drills all in the same drive.
Yeah. You gotta will drill three holes, you know, at the same time, or I guess you could do two holes if you wanted to, for dowels, so that you end up with a way to lock things together like a domino would, keeping know, them in line. And I think it was like $300 or something. I don't know. I ordered it before I even finished the video. I was like, yes, I'll take one of these, please.
I think it's great.
But it hooks up to a drill, and it's just really cool. I love the fact that he is continually coming up with just cool ideas and making them happen and making them available to people. I think it's great. So go check it out.
Andy reminds me of like the turn of the century inventor that just keeps tinkering and trying new products all the time. When you see, you think like guys like Alexander Graham Bell or of course Thomas Edison, but like guys like Tesla who are just constantly tinkering and coming up with new ideas. I come up with new ideas all the time, but I'm just, they think to take it to the point where Andy does, I'm just like, I'd rather just make a lamp video. It's like all the work he puts into stuff, and he's so precise.
You know what I should do? I've never made a lamp video before.
Yeah, I'm like, I could make that invention, but yeah, let me just do this instead. Let me play with my CNC and make a shelf bracket.
No, his brain really works like no other.
I appreciate the amount of work he puts into finishing his projects.
I almost texted you guys last night saying I don't know if we've done this topic yet, but I want to talk about tinkering because I haven't had enough time in the shop to tinker, and I can totally feel that my creativity goes down when I don't give myself time to just play. And I think there's a topic there, and I need to just either schedule or not get so busy, but tinkering helps so much.
Yeah, that would be good. I think we could probably come up with, well, we'll figure out how to talk about it, but I think we could probably come up with suggestions, like prompts to help somebody tinker. Because I think that's my problem, is that I will find things to put in front of it. But if I just like have free time, then I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to go do this thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, cool. You guys got anything else for this week?
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll, I'm traveling next week, so no show, but we'll see you after that.
Oh, don't tell anybody that I know.
Okay.
I'm going to tell everybody I have Wednesday morning. I have a very important podcast to do.
Free Wednesday. We'll catch you next time.
Bye, Ben. Good night. Love you.